6:09, and our next story is going to be on the legality and ethics of wiretapping. Now, this is probably, I don't know how much background you need, but because we covered this on the show yesterday. I believe our colleagues in the morning have also been talking about this. But if you missed it, the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission released several recordings of conversations between former Prime Minister Datuk Seri Najib Abdul Razak and several individuals.
Yeah, and the recordings sounded like they were tapped from phone calls. And since their release yesterday, there have been arguments saying that it is unethical and even dangerous to secretly record these conversations, especially in one instance when it involved two heads of state talking privately with each other. And there were also questions about how these apparently wiretapped conversations were released to the public first before being handed over to the police for investigations.
However, apparently enforcement agencies are allowed to tap the phones of any Malaysian if they suspect that a crime is being committed. And that's according to an article on the Malaysian Insight, who spoke to quite a few lawyers, one of whom is actually going to be our guest shortly after this also. However, for these recordings to be used as evidence, their authenticity must first be verified in court. So since the recordings have been released, there have been a number of statements coming out from a variety of parties. It's a real mixture of things, right? Like, some people have concerns and doubts over the timing of the release of these recordings. Mm-hmm. Others want to know a little bit more about why it is that they were released to the public first or at all, as opposed to just being used as evidence within a court case. So I think there are those factors to consider alongside what you were speaking about earlier, Aiman, that issue of security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this whole wiretapping aspect of it is still very fresh, perhaps in some people's memories. Especially in light of News of the World a few years ago, where several key figures' mobile phones were tapped by that media company. And that was considered a huge breach of privacy and security as well. So in terms of the ethics of how this recording was obtained, it is, of course, understandable that some people would raise this issue, because we don't know how many other conversations were recorded, how it happened in the first place. Were there no security measures to sort of scan these private communication channels? So it does raise a lot of questions about our own security in telecommunications, and whether, you know, even right now, are our leaders' communications being monitored or bugged as well? So it does raise these questions, really.
So we want to understand a bit more about the legality of wiretapping, and also how to go about, I suppose, verifying and authenticating these recordings should they be used in a court of law. There are just all these questions that have been circling, I think, ever since the release of the recordings. If you have any questions or thoughts, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're crossing over now to constitutional lawyer Surendra Anath to get a deeper understanding of this. Surendra, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries.
Okay, so first things first, is wiretapping legal, and under what circumstances is it permissible?
Yes, it is legal under certain circumstances. In essence, under the Criminal Procedure Code, there is a particular section that allows a police officer, if authorized by the public prosecutor, to intercept communications in relation to commission of an offence. So that's one scenario where you can do it. Another scenario is under the MACC Act. Commission of the MACC, again, under the authorization of the public prosecutor, can also intercept communications in relation to investigation for offences under the Act. So these are more relevant examples of when public officers or relevant officers can intercept communication.
So to be clear, I mean, right now, I think from what I understand, we don't know where the source of these particular recordings come from.
Yes.
So
yes,
that's to say that it might not strictly then be legal, right? I mean, this exact moment.
Yes, because we don't know who did it, assuming it's not a police officer, and assuming even if it was not authorized properly under the provision, it would be legal.
And does it make a difference that this was a sitting prime minister who was the subject of these recordings?
Not at all. So anyone can be subject to the interception, even a sitting prime minister.
And on the other thing here, and we spoke to Lim Wee Jet yesterday about this, and he mentioned this, and of course it's come up time and time again. Could you kind of take us through how the right to privacy factors into all of this, especially in terms of the release of the recordings?
Right. So I think if you start with privacy, the right to privacy and also the freedom of expression actually protects against interception and surveillance by the state. I think that's a starting point which everyone accepts. The dispute or the issue is in what circumstances is the state allowed to now interfere with this right under the guise of surveillance. So I think the international human rights law is quite clear on this. It can be done. There are a few requirements. So first, you need to have a law. I suppose you can tick that box first. The second is that law needs to be for a legitimate purpose. So that includes, for example, national security or the prevention of a crime. So let's just assume the second box is also ticked for the local laws. The third requirement, I think, is where we fail, because any law needs to be proportionate. So if you're going to allow interception, and because it's a breach of privacy, it has to be the last resort. It has to be scrutinized by a review body or at least by a court. It has to be for a certain time period. It has to be precise towards a particular type of communication and a particular person. So essentially, you got to ensure that the least amount of invasion happens to the harm that you're trying to prevent. Mm. So the current law does not provide for any of this. And the fourth is that there must be certain due process rights to the person who is being served, where the communication is being intercepted. So that person has to be notified and given a chance to address the surveillance. Again, the current law doesn't provide for that.
And what about in terms of national security? Because some have raised concerns that, you know, these recordings involved heads of state in private conversations. So is that something that needs to be considered as well?
Well, I don't think that national security here can be used as a shield or defense against the communications. Because if it is indeed in relation to the commission of a crime, then I think then it's permitted.
And we, I think, need to also move on to the next thing, which is this idea of verifying the recordings. How can they be verified? I mean, what would that process look like?
To be fairly honest, I'm not entirely sure. Because
fair enough.
I suppose a lot will depend on the source and the device that we use to record it. And you will need to examine that device, which was actually used to determine the authenticity. So yeah, it's got a lot of technical expertise involved in that.
And how about, you know, sort of determining that the audio hasn't been tampered with? Is there a possible way to do that?
Again, it's something that only an expert on that will be able to confirm. Mm-hmm. I suppose there are ways to do it, but it appears that the MACC chief is quite confident that it is authentic.
And coming back all the way, I suppose, to the source, right? From the point of view of the person who actually committed the act, who conducted the wiretaps, what potential repercussions might they face?
Yeah, so that would depend. So you have the Whistleblowers Act, which grants protection if you provide such information in relation to an offence to the relevant agency. So in this case, he did provide it to a relevant agency, which is the MACC. But the problem with the Whistleblowers Act is that if the disclosure is an offence under any other written law, then you are not protected as a whistleblower. And one particular section of written law comes to mind, that is 203A of the Penal Code, which essentially prohibits civil servants or public officers from disclosing any information obtained during the course of their employment or in complying with their duties under the law. So in the event if this anonymous person caught this information, during the performance of his duties as a police officer or an investigation officer, then he is prohibited from disclosing it under the Penal Code, and therefore he's not entitled to protection under the Whistleblowers Act. Mm.
So there have been sort of like suggestions that, you know, when the MACC did the press conference yesterday, they should have perhaps clarified where this came from or how they came to obtain it. If they actually did that, how would this work in terms of, you know, the provisions under the Whistleblower Protection Act? Would it have caused any problems?
Well, I suppose if they had clarified how the information came to them, and if it was indeed not done by a police officer under the law, then arguably one could claim protection under the Whistleblowers Act. But in the reverse, if it was not done by a police officer authorized by law, then that means it was done illegally. So it is effectively illegal evidence obtained by illegal means. Although it can be admitted in court nevertheless, but again, you know, it raises certain questions on the usage of such evidence.
So another question that's come up time and time again is the order of events, right? Whether or not that means that it was improper, because of course MACC released it to the public first instead of using it in the court first or submitting it directly to the police or other authorities. Could you take us through the significance of that? Does it matter?
Well, there's a lot of grey area and split opinions even amongst lawyers on this. I think I'll just start with that. So I think that the first objection to MACC having released this to the public is that it could be sub judice and therefore in contempt of court, because some of the matters in the recordings pertain to 1MDB and SRC, which are ongoing in the current criminal trials. Now, one view is that by releasing this, there is, to a certain degree, influencing of the public, potentially persons who are involved in the judicial process as to the guilt or innocence of the former Prime Minister. And this might, to a certain extent, then influence the case itself. And therefore, prejudice is right to a fair trial. That's one argument I want to take. The other argument is that because, well, this is a case on public interest, 1MDB concerns all our, I mean, it's everyone's interest, and we should know the investigations and what's going on. And further, to amount to contempt, normally sub judice involves a jury trial, where members of the jury would be influenced by what's going on in media. Well, here we have a single judge who is expected and trained to decide on a case solely based on the evidence before him, without regard to what's being out there in the media. So that's the other argument on why it was okay for MACC to release it to the public. My personal view is that I don't think it was wrong in law for MACC to go ahead and release it first to the public, but I think it might not have been appropriate for them to do so. I don't see any pressing need for the recordings to be released in full to the public. I think it should just follow the process of the law, that is, you investigate it, there's a basis for it to be put into a charge, introduced as evidence in court, then the public will know about it if it's put before court, because it's a public hearing anyway. So I just don't see why there was an urgent need to let the public know at this point on the entire recordings.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from KSY who asks, does it matter if the recording was not properly obtained or recorded when used as evidence later in the court of law?
It doesn't matter. So evidence obtained illegally can be admitted in court. That in itself does not preclude the evidence from being used in court. Obviously, the defense will raise other issues, such as the authenticity issue, to challenge the evidence. But illegality per se does not preclude it from being used.
Right. So, okay, I mean, I think we can expect the situation to develop. What should we be looking out for? What is going to happen next?
Well, I think two things will most likely happen. This recordings might be introduced as evidence in ongoing cases, in cases where the defense has been called, the prosecution might need to apply to reopen their case to introduce this evidence. And obviously, the defense will then be given a chance to rebut this evidence. For cases where it's still in the prosecution stage, I suppose they can still put it in. And if it pertains to matters that are not part of any of the pending proceedings, it might give rise to perhaps new charges.
Surendra, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
No problem. Thank you.
That was constitutional lawyer Surendra Anand weighing in on the subject of wiretapping and its legalities, and also, I think, just helping us understand the circumstances surrounding the recording. Because while it was explosive news, I think it has raised a number of questions, a number of concerns, and I feel a little bit more informed, actually, after speaking to Surendra, because I really, I needed that context.
Yeah, exactly, because some of the concerns raised, at first glance does have, like, legitimate value, really, like issues of, like, how it affects security, privacy, and the ethics behind it. So we now know more about the issue. So, because these are probably points that will be used in defense, really. So moving forward, these kinds of questions, you know, we have more clarifications on them now.
Casey says, ethical or not, the public will think that the end justifies the means. I mean, I guess this is why they went ahead and revealed the recordings, mainly for politicking purposes. Perhaps it's to distract the public on other issues, which is also an opinion that I've heard said, you know, that we come back to this point about how, for some, I suppose, the timing of the release is suspect.
Yeah, exactly. And as Najib pointed out, it's suspicious because of how close it is to the Kimani's by-election. So it seems like a distraction tactic or like a smear campaign against Barisan Nasional or something.
Yeah, to which I would say I would argue that you shouldn't let the argument that it's a distraction distract you from the content of the recordings. So it's a little bit of a circular argument. Dennis says, wiretapping is nothing new, nothing to be alarmed about. It is only the contents and from who to who that is causing the alarm. It would be a shame if we're going to get angry with Latifa Koya for disclosing it and not the actors.
But it's natural that people will want to target the circumstances surrounding the recordings, right? Because sure, the content of it does appear incriminating towards those involved in the recording. The circumstances surrounding it will continue to be a point that people will take advantage of in terms of defending the parties involved.
DMA says, no to wiretapping. Only God, if you believe in one, and myself should know what happened in my private realm. Wiretapping is only negotiable in wartime for the sake of national security.
Yeah, and globally, wiretapping is seen as an unethical instrument or approach to have because it does can be seen as an invasion of privacy. But I think that is a conversation that we should pursue in future times.
I also think that there is something there to be said about whether it's only in times of war or when we talk about, because the term public interest, right, is being used. So at what point does public interest become great enough to make it an acceptable thing? And I think that's a very personal question to most people, but it is worth considering. So, if you have thoughts, send them through to us. You can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.